Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 5 of Bizarro UK. This is the first show of the new year, which I've been informed is 2015. So I just want to wish you all, both of you, a happy new year, if you're listening. And today we've got a very special guest, Matthew Vaughan. Are you there, Matthew?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank God for that. So Matthew is a relatively new author, and he's got a book coming out I have no idea. When's it coming out, Matthew?
We don't actually have an actual release date, but it should be really soon.
Right. So he's got a book coming out really soon, and we're going to talk about that in a little while. But first, Matthew is going to tell us a bit about himself.
I'm a father of four, and four little wild creatures, and work full time as a maintenance technician in injection molding factory. But I spend the free time that I can writing bizarro fiction or kind of dark, borderline weird kind of stuff, I guess. Got a couple stories out, on some e-zines like The Mustache Factor, and got something up at Bizarro Central. And recently I had a story appear in an anthology for Dinotox Ministries, their Bizarro Zombie Anthology. And this ADHD vampire is going to be my first actual, I guess, more novella size-wise. But
this should be we're going to talk a little bit more about that now. So what's the general premise for the ADHD vampire?
Basically, it takes place on a cruise ship for old people. It's kind of like a old people singles type cruise where they can go and kind of be free and have fun, in their old age. And there happens to be a centuries-old vampire stored away in the cargo hold that gets awakened. And he's actually the half-brother of Vlad Dracula. He's the unknown half-brother that he's a little simple, has some problems such as, his ADHD, and he gets awakened and decides to, he wants to try to make a name for himself like his older brother has, and so he tries to go through and, do what vampires do on his cruise ship. So it's got some gore and some funny, and we got
I
have a problem with being serious, so I kind of have to throw the funny in there. It's just the way I am.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I mean, it's sometimes if you've got it built into you, I find the same thing is that you really struggle to keep the humor out of out of your work. So sometimes it's just best just to go, yeah, this is what I am. This is what I'm going to write. Because, I mean, I try and write the more serious stuff as well. And often I delete the humour afterwards because I find it seeping in because I'm shit. So it's one of those things. Is that the same with you? Have you tried to write anything serious? Or...
Well, yeah, yes, in the past, when I first decided to start trying to, you know, really do something professionally with writing, that's what I wanted to do was write more horror. I always was big into, you know, Clive Barker and Brian Keene, David Moody, you know, things like people like those guys. And I wanted to try to write, you know, the more serious horror. And I just realized I couldn't do it. I wasn't very good at it. So... kind of fell back on something I felt a little more comfortable with. You know, I was like, this, well, I discovered bizarro fiction, and that kind of helped there too, you know. Kind of just,
well, that's it. I mean, there are authors out there that bizarro is sort of made for them. Do you know what I mean? It's like before bizarro came along, it was just comedy or comedy horror, but now with bizarro, you've got that whole outlet to sort of unleash your.
Mm-hmm.
Your creativity. And with the ADHD vampire, I mean, one of the best ways to make a monster more vulnerable is to give it ADHD. I think that's just awesome. other than, like, you know, the I'm going to offend some people now, but the OCD Frankenstein or something. it's the best way to bring the humour to a book. I wanted to say about, you said it yourself, you're a father to four. How do you manage to actually get anything done with four creatures from your loins running around the place?
Well, it's definitely not easy. It's probably the reason why I haven't gotten much done. This book probably should have gotten done and come out a long time ago, and I'd already be on my second one by now. But honestly, I do a lot of my first drafts. I handwrite, and I do it in little notebooks at work. And so the majority of the work I do on my breaks and lunches at work. So I get all that done, and then pretty much when I come home, you know, there's no time to really get anything writing-wise until we put the kids to bed, and then I get out the laptop and I start, you know, typing it all in and going through and doing the first edits and things like that. So it does create a slow process, but, you know, it's getting there.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm the father of a three-year-old, which is bad enough actually getting anything done. But you have four children of different ages, obviously not, you know. So you've got your youngest, and then you've got your oldest, which is how old?
Well, the oldest is five.
Five. So you've got, like...
Yeah, getting ready to.
Five years is a dangerous age as well. I mean, that's a very destructive age. So between, like, your youngest and your eldest... With my one, my writing process sort of went right down as soon as he turned up. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but he's costing me money. So how much are you looking forward to when they're all like 16 or 18 and you can just kick them out the door and start your career properly sort of thing?
Yeah. That's something that me and my wife kind of joke around about, the fact that we had them all so close, and that means they all will leave about the same time.
So there's something to look forward to.
They're 16 now. But you talk about being 16 or whatever. Three of my four are girls. So there's really not any part of me that's really looking forward to them being 16.
No. This is the good thing about, like, being American is you obviously have access to weaponry. So when you've got a 16-year-old daughter, that's when you can break out the armory. And whereas over here, when our daughters are 16, we've got is foul language, and it's not as as terrifying as a shotgun, say. So, but definitely, I understand why you're a bit, yeah. My son is, you know, that's different. It's like, when he's 16, I'll be like, yeah. But if with a daughter, yeah, I do not envy that at all. So, right. So, you're right when you... Sorry?
No, I was just going to say, for me, I mean, really, I'm pretty lucky. All of my kids are pretty good. My boy is actually probably the wildest one of the bunch. He's a little, he's getting ready to be 2 in March. So
I remember that.
The best word is, yeah, wild. But really, I mean, a lot of times. What's that?
Sorry, I was going to say boys are fine until they hit 2 or 2.5, and then as he's actually taken to generally headbutting the cat and running around, and my wife gets a bit weirded out when she goes in to change him at night and he's got an erection. <It's> like, what do you do with that? So she comes in and tells me, and I'm like, just change him. He's obviously having a nice dream. Leave him alone. So, but yeah, boys are definitely... Yeah, I didn't want to really bring that up. I don't know why that came out, but... but yeah, with girls, you know, obviously. Well, I'm just telling the truth. I mean, she's like... Yeah, these things need to be brought to the attention of the public, I think. And
there's some people out there that might need to know, you know.
Well, this is it. Like, if there are people out there whose children are showing signs of, you know, in the nappy area, it's absolutely normal. And just ignore it. Unlike my wife, who comes in screaming. And I'm like, just leave it alone. That's normal. It's 3. Yeah. I had my first one at 6 months. Anyway, we've gone off on a tangent already. yeah. So with the writing that you do manage to get done between obviously a lot of potty training and I don't know what 5-year-old girls do. Dora the Explorer. Yeah. Do you have Peppa Pig over there? Do you have access to?
Netflix.
No, yeah, Peppa Pig. That's what ours watches, and it's just constant. We've had 12 hours of it today, and it's constant. We sing the song to each other, me and my wife, and it's I just want to kill somebody.
Yeah, it's like they get into something. They don't like to get away from it. And then you get to the point where you're at work and you're basically, you know, wanting to sing songs. Not that you want to, you just kind of don't have a choice.
Well, that's it. And then there are, like, little quotes that you pick up as well. Like, you know, and I feel sorry for Peppa... I don't know why I'm talking about this, but I feel sorry for Peppa Pig's dad because he's always getting bullied for how fat he is. And it's usually Peppa that's doing the bullying. And I'm like, you little judgmental... you know.
Wow.
Oh, I'm getting really offended by the fact that Peppa Pig's dad is being bullied. So this is what being... the father to a young child is like, especially, I mean, it takes a small thing to wind me up, but yeah, that really takes the biscuit. She's a little, annoying little pig. So, back to you, anyway. how do you go about your writing? I mean, do you usually sit down and plot, or do you... sort of just hit a blank screen running.
Going back to talking about when I first started trying to really want to write, I tried the plotting. I tried to, you know, outline. I had ideas for, I used to be really big into comic books when I was younger. And so, I had some ideas for, more, I guess, horror related comics and you know, I'd plot out like a couple issues and when it sit down and come time to write, I kind of bored myself with it by spending so much time outlining and plotting. So once I started getting more to the feel of I guess the, what became the Bizarro type stuff, I just kind of just went with it, you know, like you say, hit a blank screen. But I mean, most of the time, you know, of course, it starts with an idea, you know. I might sitting at work and I have an idea, you know, for can't think of anything off the top of my head, but, you know, just an idea for a character, maybe, yeah, you know, or something that I want a guy to do, and I'll write it down in my phone, you know. I just, most, you know, greatest thing is smartphones, you know, you can pretty much, it's like carrying a notepad with you everywhere, you know, and, so I'll just start thinking about that, and once I get something like that in my head, I can't stop thinking about it, and then a lot of times I'll either, I pretty much start developing the first few lines in my head, and then I'll just, you know, I'll pull up the laptop when I get an opportunity, or the notepad, and just start. I like to kind of surprise myself with where things are going, you know, kind of get that whole, I know, like, I don't know how much Stephen King you've read, but, like, I think it's in On Writing or whatever, he talks about that, letting your characters kind of dictate the what they do.
Yeah, I've read every sort of Stephen King, and On Writing is a great tool for authors, but I think I have to agree with him as well. It's like you, people who plot every single element of the story, it can end up sounding a little bit forced. Like you've had a goal and you've had to do what you can to reach it. Whereas if you're just sitting and you're writing by the seat of your pants, and it sometimes your characters or something will do something that generally shocks you as an author, and that element of surprise that hits an author, it will hit the reader as well. So yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've never plotted anything really. Sometimes towards the end of a chapter you can plot, but is that pretty much how you work then? It's just
I think I guess maybe in a way I have my own ADD or something. I spend too long working on something like a plot or outline, and I'm bored, and I want to, you know, when it comes time to sit down and do the work, I'm my mind's somewhere else now. I done spent too long with it. I'm already thinking about the next thing. So I found with stuff like the ADHD Vampire, I did the very first draft of it really pretty fast. I think some guys started a instead of doing like the NaNoWriMo, you know, the novel writing month, did a Bizarro writing month, and we had like our own little secret Facebook group where we can go in there and kind of help each other, you know, with or you know, try to keep everybody, you know, going, you know, keep everybody pumped up out there, yeah, support each other. And during that time, it's probably the quickest I'd ever wrote anything at this length, you know, which at the time, the first draft, I think, was only like 10,000 words. But that was every day, you know, every free moment I had at work, I was sitting down working on it. And I think that's what helped a lot, was doing it as fast as possible. Instead of, like I said, you know, spreading something out really long, I start getting bored and start thinking about something else.
Yeah.
So that works for the initial first draft.
Did you have a deadline, or was it just sort of when it was done? I mean,
more of a personal deadline.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, do you set yourself unreasonable deadlines? Like, you know, I mean, most writers do. There's like, I do it, and I'm like, I've got to get this finished. It's got to be done by the end of it. But there's no reason why it's got to be done. It's just your own sort of personal deadline.
I had nobody I was going to, you know, nobody wanted it. Nobody was asking me to write it, you know. It's just kind of like, I want this to be done at, you know, the end of this month or whatever. And I don't think I made it, but yeah, close.
I think that's just a common sort of idiosyncrasy across the board, really, isn't it? It's just like, you know, plus, I mean, you probably wanted to get started on something else as well. Do you usually, once you finished a project, would you then go on to start another, say, long piece of work, or tend to do some short stories and have a little break, or is it sort of constant?
I like to, here recently, most of last year, I pretty much would jump into like another longer piece of work. I was kind of doing the short stories and submitting them and getting rejected and kind of getting burnt out in the whole thing. And that's what got me in the idea of, you know, I need to sit down maybe and let's see what I can do with some longer pieces of work. And so once, like, I finished ADHD Vampire, I kind of was like, I don't really want to jump back into editing it or anything. I kind of want to do something else right now, let it sit for a little bit. And so I jumped right into the next thing. And of course, like I said, writing in a notepad at work, I can't really, you know, edit much on the ADHD Vampire. It's now become I have to do it at home on the laptop.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to have something else, you know, at work.
Yeah.
But, you know, here recently I've started a couple short stories because some anthologies that are upcoming I'd like to try to get into.
Yeah. There's plenty out there, isn't there, at the moment? It's and now Bizarro sort of really taking off. There are a lot of to begin with. I mean, there was only Eraserhead and a couple of other publishers, but now, I mean, there are plenty to sort of consider, which is nice. So, which I was going to ask you about. Your story in the Bizarro Zombie Anthology That Wouldn't Die from Dinotops.
Yeah.
I mean, I've not had the pleasure of working with Jordan Kroll yet, but what was it like working with Dinotops? And I also wanted to, I'm pretty sure this is done in the dead in the water now, but you want to tell the story about how that book was originally meant to come out and what happened? Just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case. Yeah. Yeah. Did you know I was going to bring that up? I was like,
yeah.
I was in two minds whether to. But
just in case there's like one person out there that hasn't heard the story yet.
Well, I mean, there are people out there that don't know, so it's best to sort of. Plus, fuck them.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than terrible publishers doing terrible things and. This one in particular deserves all the bad press they can get, as far as I'm concerned. So,
yeah. Well, you know,
I'll let you elaborate.
Well, for me, it started out. What's that?
No, I was going to say, if, you know, I didn't want to put you on the spot, so if you don't want to, sort of, that's fine. But
No. No, I was just going to say, for me, it started, you know, I actually don't even remember exactly how I got involved into it, but somehow I seen that guy, Christian Hanner. I guess he started his Spectacular Publications or whatever, and he had this notion to publish this Bizarro Zombie Anthology. And I thought, oh, well, that's great. You know, that sounds like something I could probably do. You know, I had no story for it, so I contacted him and asked him how, you know, if he had any room, you know, was he still looking for submissions? He's like, yeah. So I busted out this story that essentially is about zombies from the zombie point of view, where they are actually the more of the heroes of the book, or the story, I guess you'd say. And they're kind of like playing a punk rock band, you know, just trying to be, you know, off the wall with it, I guess you could say. But so I sent him the story, and, you know, didn't hear a lot about it. You know, he every once in a while would put something like he had the cover made, and, you know, maybe make some announcements about people that were supposed to be in it or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it just kind of was a long time of not hearing anything. You know, it got to the point where, I guess, you know, he's supposed to send out contracts, and, you know, never received one. This was going to happen. He's always seemed to be promising something when you talk to him. And then nothing ever actually happened. Nothing came about. And over time, I think it kind of became something that most everybody forgot about. It's been so long.
Yeah.
And I don't remember whether it was Jordan Kroll or Garrett Cook. One of the two, I think, were the first ones to actually, you know, it might have been Jordan, was the first one to actually say something to him, you know, actually bring it to light. Because apparently he doesn't. Things going on with other people, you know, people that he was supposed to actually be publishing novels, and you know, he made a lot of promises that he wasn't keeping. And he turned out to be, I guess, like a charlatan, I guess you could say, you know, made a lot of promises he wasn't going to keep. And I don't know, I remember that he was supposed to release do a press release to bring to light, you know, his version of everything that's going on and how he was going to defend Spectacular Publications. And I think, you know, it's been a couple of years, and I think he still hasn't done that press release yet.
No, I actually, I remember that happening and sitting there, you know, behind my, you know, and sort of waiting for this press release to come out myself, because I'd it pissed off a lot of my sort of friends or colleagues or whatever by offering to publish and then nothing materializing. So then, like you say, steps up with this press release, and I think it was going to be like one day, the press release will be tomorrow, and then here we are, a good, I have no idea how many years later, still waiting, actually. So if you're listening, you've got some explaining to do.
Yeah, but, it's funny. I know that I was bummed about it, because it would have been my first published work, you know, as far as an actual paper, you know, an actual physical book, you know, to come out. So I was pretty excited about that, you know.
Which
I
makes
know
it,
some people
it makes
like,
it worse. That makes it worse, because then you know you're just starting out. You're obviously a good writer. You think, oh, this is it. Made my first sale, and then some fucking idiot masquerading as a publisher gives you the finger, and then you've got to sort of, I mean, did that affect your going into resending it out? Or sorry, yeah, I know that Dynatox took it on anyway, but did that sort of give you a negative thought of all presses, or was it just you knew he was just a dick from the beginning?
Yeah, basically that. I mean, you know, I kind of sit back and I pay attention a lot, you know. I've made Facebook friends with a lot of different, you know, people in the community, you know, a lot of, you know, see a lot of what goes on with the other publishers, and it's kind of like, oh, this guy's just, you know, he's just an asshole, he just did whatever. I don't even really understand exactly what he was trying to get across here, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I think Kevin Strange made a comment one time. It's like this guy actually gave advance money to people for work that he's going to publish. I mean, what did he benefit from just taking stories and not doing anything with them? What was the actual point of all that, you know? But
well, that's
just,
it.
I kind of felt like, you know, it's just one bad apple, you know, really. I just went ahead and continued to, you know, soldier on, I guess you could say. What's kind of funny, because then I ended up in another kind of a bad deal. And then I started, then after two of them, it's kind of like, man, it's like, what is going on here?
This place is full of dicks.
Yeah. But, you know, but I think for the most part, you know, I guess that kind of was one of the reasons why I started focusing more on longer work rather than just try to constantly send out short stories, because, you know, apparently people just start up, presses or whatever just to put out their own kind of anthology, and, you know, they'll either not do it or they'll screw people over, or I don't know.
Yeah. We have a name for these these small presses that are appearing, and they usually appear out of nowhere, and by the end of the week they've got 10 imprints, all non-paying, all for sort of ridiculous terms, and it's the authors who are just starting out who they keep preying on, and it really gets my fucking goat that these people parading as small presses think that they can do that to people's livelihoods. But I mean, you saw that particular anthology found a home eventually with Dynatox, who are a relatively successful company, and so how did it come about that Dynatox took it on?
Well, you know, I think I don't know whether Jordan just, you know, felt bad about the whole situation. He was kind of, from what I understand, he seemed pretty been out of shape about it, like, you know, as well as he should.
Yeah.
And I honestly, you know, I guess it was a lot that had to do with the people involved, like Lee Widener, you know, and he wanted to edit it and, you know, still get it out there. Everybody kind of was still, you know, hey, this is a crappy situation, you know, it kind of sucks that it happened, but, you know, it's kind of nice to really just look at it out there, and, you know, Jordan stepped in there and was all like, hey, you know what, I'll go ahead and, you know, we'll keep us together and we'll go ahead and get it done, you know, so it was pretty nice of him, you know. I haven't I haven't got a copy in my hands yet. I'm kind of excited about, you know, reading everybody else. There's a lot of really good authors in there, you know, that really pretty happy to be have my name in the table of contents with them.
Yeah, the table of contents looks awesome.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. So that was a bit of a fucked up introduction to the world of Bizarro. Even though Spectacular Productions never really got off the ground, which we'll say no more about, because who knows what's happened? Who knows what's happened to him? Well,
Something actually about him doing something with, like, I guess supposed to be trying to, like, promote bands or something like that, and he's, like, apparently doing the same thing, but in, like, some kind of, I don't know what, you know, style of music it is or whatever, but basically I hear he's kind of, like, got the same thing going on with musicians now or something, I don't know.
Yeah, so you're saying that, I've just got images of, like, bands waiting outside venues that have been locked up for years, just, like, shivering in the fucking rain outside their van, just sort of, what's going on? That's pretty much what I've got. So,
that's probably the truth.
That's probably what's happening, there's bands out there now. Yeah. Still waiting for their drum kits to arrive.
Yeah. Poor guys.
Right. So, we're going to take a few minutes now I believe you've got something to read.
I got a little chapter excerpt here, you know, something.
Cool. If you just jump straight into that, and then we'll everybody know what it is. So,
all right, this is I guess it's kind of like about midway through, you know, our vampire with his ADHD issues that has already been awakened and kind of you know, making his way through the ship, doing this thing that vampires do, you know. Not, you know, obviously not everybody's aware of what's going on, but I guess it's a start.
Yeah, please.
All right, well.
Cool.
Lucinda decided maybe a late-night stroll around the ship would do her some good. Climbing out of the bed was never an easy task for an 84-year-old, but she remained surprised at how deeply George could sleep. He never moved or woke once. She looked down and realized she had fallen asleep naked. She was disgusted by her old and wrinkly body. She hated her sagging tits and belly fat. But at her age, there wasn't anything that could be done about it. She dressed in her pajamas and wrapped a robe around her body. As she opened the door that would take her out into the hallway, Lucinda noticed a strange smell. It smelled as if somebody had shit themselves nearby her cabin. It reminded her that she didn't put on an adult diaper. She didn't always have a problem with her bowels, but there had been a couple of instances, and that was enough for her to take the necessary precautions. She wore a diaper anytime she would be away from her home or in a new place where she might not know exactly where the toilet was. Turning to go back inside, she heard a noise and looked down the hallway. There was a figure, but in the poor lighting, she couldn't make out who it was. It was heading her direction, and the closer it got, she could tell it was a woman. Then she could see the blood on her clothing and thought she was hurt. Down to the hallway, forgetting all about her diaper problems and George and his snoring. "Hello? Are you okay? You look hurt," she said as she approached the woman. The woman, Estelle, did not answer. As she came closer, she recognized the woman from around the ship, but she didn't know her name. "What happened to you? Come here. Let me help you," Lucinda said. Estelle didn't answer, but as she got closer, she opened her mouth to reveal a set of fangs. Lucinda let out a piercing scream as the woman lunged at her. First Mate Ryan came running around the corner. He had just in time to see Estelle as she began feasting violently on Lucinda. Ryan made a move to try and help the woman, but being attacked when an old man stepped out from the room in front of him, and they collided. Both men fell over each other in a tangle of limbs. "My hip," the old man shouted. Ryan looked up to see what was happening with the lady being attacked, but doors were opening all along the hallway. Old people in pajamas, nightgowns, and some half-naked were pouring into the hallway. "What the hell is going on out here?" said one old man, displaying a full upper body tattoo. Somebody screaming and yelling. A woman in skimpy red lingerie near him asked. Another old lady in a robe let out a scream when she saw Lucinda lying on the ground, blood pooled around her neck. Then she turned and saw Estelle standing next to Lucinda's body. She had blood covering her mouth and chin, running down the front of her and staining her shirt. The old lady let out another loud, piercing scream. Estelle punched the screaming lady so hard her head ripped off her neck and went flying behind her. The head hit another old man standing in nothing but stained tidy whities. The wet thud on his back wasn't enough to knock him over. He just turned to see what had hit him. When he saw the severed head staring back at him, he clutched his chest in pain and fell over dead. From there, the hallway erupted in chaos. The old people nearest Estelle tried to get away from her as she grabbed a nearby old lady. She sunk her teeth into the screaming lady as geriatrics pushed each other down, trying to keep from being her next meal. Some of the people in the hallway were smart enough to just go back into their rooms, but not many. One old man, 72-year-old Earl, who was dressed in a long red robe, got confused with all the chaos around him. Without thinking, he reached out and grabbed the nearest person to him and attacked him. 65-year-old Grace was frightened enough by what had been taking place, since she was awoken by a scream in the middle of the night. But when the older gentleman next to her turned and grabbed her by her nightgown, she thought for sure she would soil herself. Earl pulled Grace close to his wrinkled face, so close she could smell the pollen he used in his dentures. "You're not taking me alive, you chap bastard," he screamed as he leaned in and bit off her ear. Grace screamed, and her 76-year-old husband, Fred, who had also seen action in Vietnam, turned to see her being held by the crazed Earl. Grace's blood was spraying onto nearby people while Earl chewed on her ear, his dentures cracking on the diamond earring Grace always wore. Fred dropped his walker to the floor and attacked the blood-covered Earl. Earl let go of Grace when Fred made impact, and as they tumbled, the rope fell open, revealing the bright red lingerie he wore underneath. Grace continued to scream as First Mate Ryan reached her. He found a discarded woman's silk robe water on the floor. "Here, press this against your head," he told Grace. She pushed the bundle of cloth to her ear, and she freaked out in pain. "It's okay, I'm trying to help you," he said to her. Then he realized that she was looking past him. He turned and saw Estelle, covered in blood, burying her fangs in him. Estelle reached out and grabbed First Mate Ryan and tore into his neck. Grace screamed until she was hoarse and couldn't scream anymore, but she kept trying, and her mouth was wide open as Ryan's blood sprayed her down. A crowd of elderly passengers were being whittled down. Rochelle was on one end of the hallway tearing into people who had fallen or were too frightened to move. The ones who did move ran into Estelle. A few of them made it around the vampires, but not many. I guess
Hello?
Was that long enough?
Yeah. Awesome. I'm really looking forward to that now. And that's from the ADHD Vampire, which is coming out from Bizarro Pulp Press very soon. Any time now, basically.
We pretty much, from my standpoint, I mean, you know, I believe everything's done. I think they're just putting the finishing touches on making it look pretty, you know, like they always do. Bizarro Pulp Press, they got a lot of good people working for them. They put out a lot of good-looking stuff, so... I'm sure any moment now, you know, it'll be out.
Yeah, then the hard work really begins.
Like I said, you know, this is being my first one. You know, try to think of things, you know, promoting wise and everything. Try to pay attention to what all the other some of the other guys do. You know, and try to go enjoy it, or at least they'll just read it anyway.
They will. Speaking of books and things, what were your favourites from last year? Because, I mean, obviously we're just into this year. So some of your favourite authors and books from 2014?
Well, you know, honestly, I don't know. I read but maybe four books from 2014. I have a book buying problem. Me and my wife, we will go to like the book used bookstore, and we'll always walk out with a nice little stack. So I read quite a few books last year, but you know they range from Philip K. Dick books, you know, from when originally published and whatever, and I'm trying to think of what I read. Oh, I read Andre Duza's Technicolor Terrorist from Deadeye Press.
Yeah.
I believe it came out last year. That was pretty good. That's the first thing from him I'd ever read. Yeah, he's I enjoyed that.
I haven't read anything yet, but I'm looking forward to reading I think it's King Dollar, is it called? Which has just come out through Strange House. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing some good things at the moment.
Yeah, he got that I guess it's the zombie book that WZMB or something like that, I guess it's supposed to be had to do with, like, I guess a radio station or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember what it might be another Deadite book. I'm not sure. I can't remember where it's coming out from. But, yeah, his stuff looks really good.
Yeah. Doing some good stuff at the moment. So I wanted to mention something which is very important. The fact that you have an awesome beard. My beard is very much in the early stages, and it looks a little bit shit at the moment. But yours, it's like you descended. Yeah, you know, you were from Asgard or something. You have an awesome beard. I just wanted to ask what you feed it for my own personal you know, how to turn my little beard into your huge sort of manly beard, or is it just years of neglect?
Basically, in laziness, it all stems from being lazy. But you know, it's probably the genes. I think my family's a lot of bearded men in my family. My dad, he's always had a beard ever since I've been born, I think, or since I've been alive enough to know what's going on. And, you know, uncles and things like that. They actually have family reunions sometimes, and my aunt, she's really big into genealogy, and she'll bring these pictures of, like, you know, great-great-great-grandfathers and things like that, and they'll have these huge, massive beards. That actually,
yeah,
you know, they make me envious.
It's a family thing.
Yeah.
It's a family thing.
my
grandma's got an awesome beard. Her beard is just, I aspire to the same beard as my grandmother, but I'm still working on it.
Well, politics is and you can,
yeah. Yeah, I've got nothing but time. is there anything, any particular subject that you could never write about? I mean, there are certain things that sort of offend people, or you'd find too tough. Is there anything that you could never really put down on paper, or is everything sort of, you know? It's a really strange question, nearly as strange as the beard one, but you know, I couldn't write about. You know, I personally couldn't write about. You know, say a young boy the same age as my son, something happening to him. Do you know what I mean? Because that would, you know, really, it'd be tough to write about. So, is there anything that, you know, that you could never find yourself putting down on paper?
You know, it's something I've never actually really thought about. I suppose it might depend on context. You know, something, you know, I might be able to write about something, you know, really, really terrible happening, you know, in a way of, you know, casing, you know, like a villain of a story or something like that. But I could never really, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say, you know, if the context wasn't right, you know, I don't think I would feel good about it. But
yeah.
Talking about the, with the, you know, something happening to a child, you know, like the same age as your son.
Yeah.
From a story by Richard Thomas. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not.
Yeah.
And his story involved young kid. And I know he had young kids at the time, and I talked to him about it, asked him about it. You know, that seemed to be, like, to be pretty tough to do something like that. You know, to write something like that. And I guess in a way, he said it is, but that also helped to make that story that much better. You know, because you're putting that much your own personal feelings into it.
Yeah,
but
there is that.
I know I've read stuff though that what it involves kids, you know, the age of my children, and it does kind of get you. So So I've never actually sat down and tried to do it right, something like that. Maybe I couldn't. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't know. There's something I never really thought about.
Nah.
I know that I wrote some stuff, question what everybody else is going to think about it.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, could I have gone a little too far with this? You know, I think I might have asked my wife that a time or two. Does this seem like it's gone a little too far?
That's a common thing. I think the best thing, if you're a Bizarro author, is having someone there to run it by and just go, did I overstep the mark just a little bit? Or, you know, and if they say yes, then then you leave it in.
yeah, then it's perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah, but my brother, he's like me. He's in beginning stages of writing, trying to get work out there. So we let each other read a lot of stuff, and that helps too. You know, he reads a lot, so I let him read my stuff, and like, what do you think? Is this too much or not enough?
That's good to have somebody to bounce it off. And I mean, is he writing sort of the same genre? The same? Is he into Bizarro or?
No, he's more into like noir. You know. He's more like into, I guess, crime fiction, things like that.
That's good to have somebody in a different genre look at your work as well, because they can be brutally honest with,
mm-hmm.
and likewise with you. I do like noir myself, never really written any, but I am a big fan of noir stuff. Is there any book, any book in the world that you wish that you'd written because it was just so fucking awesome? These are all thinkers. I can go back to the beard if you want.
You know, actually, I'm used to beard questions, so I probably have more answers for that than anything else. But I don't know. I don't know. I've read a lot of books that I felt are really, really awesome. But I don't know that I actually feel like, you know, that I wish I would have wrote it, you know. More than anything, I'll read a book and I'll be like, hey, I wish I could write something themed up as good as this, that someone else out there will read what I wrote and feel the same way that I feel about this particular book right here, you know. I read, I don't think it was last year, but it might have been the beginning of last year, but it didn't come out last year. Eddie Rathke, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He wrote a book called Ash Cinema. Came out through, it's like Kuboa Press. I can't remember exactly what it was called, some press. But it was not Bizarro or anything, but I mean, it's just his style and everything. It just really blew me away. When I finished that, I was like, wow, that really inspired me to want to try to write something that, you know, someone would really be blown away by. And then instead I wrote the ADHD Vampire, but, you know.
People are going to be blown away by that. You know, you will be judging your own work alongside other people's. And, you know, I do it. Everybody, you know, in the genre does it. Everybody who's ever picked up a pen will do it. And you've got to remember that, you know, your work will stand alone anyway, so it's no good sort of comparing it, I suppose. Although I am jealous of certain people, but I'm not gonna get into that.
It happens. Yeah, I mean,
do you like to do when you're not writing and looking after four children and being a general sort of a beard comber? What hobbies do you have?
Between the kids and, you know, combing the beard takes a lot. You know, it's a lot of probably a big portion of my day right there. But
that's 12 hours right there.
I dabble in art. You know, I like to draw, not as much as I used to. I've actually been drawing a little bit more here recently. Kind of got inspired by some stuff but I like to draw if I can, but kind of a fine line of, you know.
So I was going to ask you your artwork. I've actually been to your website and seen the artwork on there, and it's like, this dude can do everything. Do you know what I mean? It's like, usually when you get a writer, they can write, and then you get an artist and they can draw, but you put the two together and that is just a big box of fucking genius. It's like, I wish I could. I mean, I can't draw. I can draw dicks. That's all I can draw, usually in textbooks and, you know, things. But
all the places people learn. Yeah.
Well, I learned how to do that at school, so it was like, you know.
Yeah.
But your artwork is actually really good, and it's like, is that something that you could quite easily do alongside the writing, or would you prefer one over the other?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think one over the other. Maybe writing more so. I don't know. The drawing kind of too time-consuming, I suppose. I mean, all I could really do is, you know, draw by hand, you know, ink it, you know. But nowadays, everybody does so much on computers, you know, and I don't know. I'm probably not advanced enough, you know, to the point to where I could actually do something like that. You know, I'm sure if I decided just, like, say, screw writing and just be an artist, I probably could, you know, get more involved in it and go that route. But it just, you know, more than anything,
It's nice to have something like that in your tool set.
You know, sometimes I get inspired by my own writing and I want to just draw pictures and, you know, deal with the story or the book. And I know with, like, the ADHD vampire, was talking to Vinny B about
Vinny
the cover
B.
art. And Vincenzo.
Vincenzo.
And I couldn't really express to him. My idea threw my idea and was like, this is what I see, you know. And so he gave it to Pat Douglas and he made it, like, way better. But, you know, so. But, you know, kind of things when I'm sitting around. Yeah. When you're sitting around and you've got, you know, kids are in bed, you know, you've only got a couple hours. Like, you know, I really kind of want to draw, kind of feel inspired. But at the same time, I need to be working on my book, you know, so.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks in a way, but it's still fun.
Is there anything in life that scares you as a human being? Is there anything that really terrifies you, or are you just solid? Because, I mean, your beard suggests that nothing scares you, but maybe you're hiding behind it. I don't know.
Well, you know, the only things that really come to mind and involves my children, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of the world's a crazy place nowadays, you know, and I want to just keep them all locked up in my house and not let them go outside, you know. But you can't do that. You know, life doesn't allow for that. They have to go out and be their own people, you know, go to school and grow up and have their own lives, and that scares me. In a way.
Yeah. No, I completely understand that. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, you know, you're pretty much a fucking hard man. So I like to think of myself as one as well. Which is why I'm growing a beard. I know that you're pretty new to this, to writing and being published professionally. Would you have any advice for aspiring authors? Not just in the Bizarro, just in general.
Well, I would say, you know, that, you know, more than anything is just, you know, if it's something that you want to do, you know, do it. Don't spend all your time thinking about how, you know, I'd like to do this or I want to get that done, but actually sit down and put words to paper and actually, you know, create something. And develop a thick skin, because that, you know, for the most part, you know, you're not going to just write something and put it out there and everybody's going to love it and want to buy it and want to publish it. You know, you're going to have to work hard, you know, spend the years trying and improving, you know, and get to that point to where finally someone does want your stuff. You know, you have gotten to that point where you're good enough to where somebody wants to put it out for you, and it's a good feeling, you know. It's more than anything.
Yeah,
my advice would be just don't give up. It's it's tough out there.
It is tough, and like you say, thick skin is very much required if you're gonna take it seriously.
With the social media being like it is, you know, like I've Facebook friends with many, you know, different authors and, you know, and publishers, and it almost makes you feel like you see these authors and they're just constantly putting out books. It's like, wow. It's like, man, I can't even get one book put out, and this guy's doing like 3 years. You know, you just gotta realize that it takes time. You know, you gotta just keep on going, keep on trucking.
That's it. So, what's next in line for your good self? Do you have anything planned for this year? Any short stories or novellas or things that people should know about?
Well, I got currently working on what will be, I guess, my next day. It should be a little bit longer than the ADHD Vampire. It's already first draft or anything. I'm kind of editing it right now. Going to get it to somebody. I like to let William Pauly III, I like to let him edit my stuff for me. He helped me a lot with shaping various portions of the ADHD Vampire, so this particular book, I'm hoping to get it to him soon and then try to get it out there and see if I can't find somebody that might want to publish it. And then actually have
awesome
another one that I'm on the I'm writing. I'm probably a couple chapters into it when I have that done too, and maybe by the end of the year get it maybe out too, or the beginning of next year, hopefully this year, but you know, if the kids will allow me to.
Yeah. Cool. And very quickly, how can people find you online? This is for all the stalkers out there who will be haunting your Facebook page and et cetera.
Well, you know, got the Facebook page. I don't know. You just look up Matthew Vaughn. There's only about 1,000 of us out there, I think. You know, I'm not the one that makes the movies, so, you know.
I bet you get that all the time as well. It's like, fucking hell, you know, Stardust was awesome. I'm like,
yeah, I get a question about X-Men 3 a lot. You know, I mean, it wasn't my choice.
But you have a website as well.
The WordPress site. I honestly don't sure how they do that. The www.wordpress. I guess / Matthew Vaughn.
Something
right.
Like that. Yeah.
Actually,
right.
I think if you Google my name, it does come up in like page 2 or 3.
Yeah. You know, if you Google Matthew Vaughn Bizarro, that's how I found it. Matthew Vaughn Bizarro, and you'll find it. Definitely.
Awesome.
Right, so we're just going to tie it up, and thank you for joining me, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah, I've had a good time.
It's been a pleasure. Awesome. I wish we could talk for longer.
Yeah, you know, ask me more tough questions that I don't know the answers to.
No, it's been a lot of fun, mate. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
No. I'll speak to you soon.
All right. I'll talk to you.
Get out of it, mate.
I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.